Welcome to Mind Food Radio, Smart Thinking with Michael McHugh and Ben Starr.
Thank you for joining us and welcome to Mind Food Radio, Smart Thinking for another week. I hope you've had a fabulous week, whatever you've been up to, and here we are again on the radio. Coming up on today's program, Peter Raymond, World Parkinson's Day is around the corner, and he's going to tell us all about that. We're going to be chatting with Kitty Ferguson, and Kitty has a, well, quite a sad story to tell us in our My Story segment, but one with a lot of hope as well. We'll also be chatting with Mariam Grasby. You might remember Mariam from MasterChef. She'll be joining us on the program to talk about some Thai cooking, and Julian Wiggins, the CEO of Bowel Cancer Australia, he'll also be joining us on the line today, right here on Mind Food Radio, Smart Thinking.
Mind Food Magazine and Mind Food Radio, together, smart thinking.
Well, now we cross live to a health farm. Rhonda is live on location. She's in a break. Rhonda, how are you coping out there, darling?
Very hard.
Come back, all's forgiven.
You know, as Michael said before, one of our chefs told us that the best way to lose weight, how was it, Michael?
Just go skiing. He was from Thredbo, Rhonda.
Yes, I'll have to move.
Do you want us to smuggle some food in?
I need food.
Oh, my goodness. How many days are you there for?
I've been here four.
How many have you got to go?
Two.
Oh, what do you have to? Just quickly, what do you do on a day? What's a day involve?
You do. You have a very, very tiny breakfast, and then you do 2 hours of cardiovascular and circuit training.
Good grief!
Then you have a lecture.
Yeah.
Then you go and have about a tablespoon of yogurt in your little bowl.
Jeez. And did you get to listen to a CD at all or not?
No, I didn't.
Oh, my goodness. You got a new one out.
Can I just tell you, you lost me on Tiny Breakfast.
I know, that was a bad stuff.
Now, listen, we have got our new CDs about to hit. They've gone off to the printer, so it's all going to happen. But I thought we might just preview one of them. And I know you and I have spent many, many months deciding what the next four should be, because these, honestly, we thought we'd put a couple of hundred out. Well, they just went in days, and they've become one of the most successful and popular things that we do in Mind Food is the Mind Food CDs. But today we're talking about super learning.
Yeah, super learning. It actually has surprised me with the results that I'm getting. I originally put it out really relevant around study learning, and I've had great success around not only with higher ed kids, higher school certificate kids, but university people, but also people generally that are in the learning phase. But what I've found it also works amazingly with is teaching the body how to heal itself. So it's super learning. So it works with reminding it about, for example, I work with someone that had lost movement in their right arm, and not only with the CD, of course, with work I was doing with them, but the CD actually re-triggered the memory of the body to actually move. So it got And so I had a lot of feedback from people saying that they felt some huge shifts in their body with healing.
Wow.
Through the super learning CD. So if we look at it as a generic design, it fits anything where we want to extend our learning. So health, well-being, and study and learning.
Mm. So super learning itself, is it a broader concept then to kind of take the mind, I guess, almost to another plane or an extra plane that can kind of get you kind of really thinking about something or really engaged and hooked into something?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it does.
And so for people, is it for people that are struggling just with basic concepts in and around learning and studying, or is it to take someone that kind of has a fairly good grasp to that next level?
What it does is it works on memory retention and the retrieval of information. So it actually helps. What comments I've had are, when I've sat in an exam, I just found the information came through a lot easier than it would normally.
It was there, yeah.
Yeah, it was there. And the same with the learning principle. Just more absorbing. I found myself more focused, actually, you know, able to absorb it differently. So I'm more open to possibilities rather than, I guess it gets you out of the box and
aims
at the bigger picture rather than keeping you in that limited one.
Yeah. So it's really that stretch, you know, which we're all into in terms of Mind Food, that stretch of thinking, that expansion of thought.
Pushing the boundaries.
Exactly, yeah.
Exactly, pushing the boundaries and activating some more of our brain cells up there. We use so little of the brain, and we're really working with exercising the brain.
Yeah. Thanks for being on today's show, Rhonda. And listen, good luck with that health farm.
Thank you.
Michael, would you like a carrot stick now?
Excuse me.
It's Mind Food Radio, Smart Thinking, and now time to chat with a guy by the name of Julian Wiggins. And Julian is the CEO of Bowel Cancer Australia. And today we thought we'd get him on the line to talk about some facts about bowel cancer and what we need to be aware of. Hi, Julian.
Hello.
It's a very interesting area that you work in, and what are the statistics on all this at the moment?
Well, the statistics are that around about 14,000 Australians are diagnosed with bowel cancer each and every year. And of those, around about 4,000 people actually lose their fight against the disease.
Is that because they get it too late, or is it just because it's hard to operate on? Or
no, you're correct in what you're saying in terms of a lot of those bowel cancers which are diagnosed are presented too late to actually treat and cure.
Okay, so most people wouldn't know that they have bowel cancer. So what would be some tell-all signs in the early stages that you need to go get checked?
Well, the obvious sign is, of course, blood in the toilet. That's the most obvious sign of bowel cancer, or there is something potentially needs further investigation in that area.
Mm-hmm.
There are other sort of common symptoms, for want of a better word,
yep.
And that can be unexplained weight loss, just general tiredness, but yep. They can also be associated with other things.
Okay.
So what we recommend is people experiencing potential symptoms, just go to see your GP and tell the GP what you're experiencing, and if they need further investigation, they'll be followed up.
Is bowel cancer a direct reflection of the lives that we live now and the fact that we don't really look after ourselves and we live in a fast food and a fast society?
Well, certainly in terms of bowel cancer, around about 70% of all bowel cancer cases are influenced by modifiable diet and lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
So we directly what we do in terms of physical activity or the lack thereof, sitting in an office is not necessarily conducive to a healthy lifestyle these days, nor is the processed foods that we eat. So if we can change some of those things by introducing fresh fruit and vegetables into our diet and fibre and those types and reducing the saturated fats, by all means, there is potential there to reduce your risk of dying from bowel cancer.
I know there's a big thing on oils at the moment. I was reading in the papers the other day about the effects of oils. I mean, you just have to be so careful about everything you eat now.
You do. Unfortunately, that's the times we now live in, but there's always new research coming online about things not to eat or to eat. We just recommend a balanced diet that is low in fat and high in fibre, basically. We all can strive for the perfect sort of diet, but at the end of the day, nothing will actually guarantee 100% that you can reduce your risk of bowel cancer. However, we do have a screening test, which most importantly can detect bowel cancer early. And the earlier it's detected, there's 90% chance that it can be treated successfully.
Okay, so what age should you be having that done?
So the age to actually screen for bowel cancer is recommended from the age of 50, and you have to do it at least once every 2 years. So that means at 50, 52, 54, 56, and so on.
Like a colonoscopy?
No. It's a simple at-home test that can be done in privacy at home. It's simple and it's accurate.
Mm-hmm.
And it just looks for invisible blood in the bowel motion, and it simply involves a bit of toilet water onto a test card, mailing it back for analysis.
Wow.
If that is positive, then yes, you will have a colonoscopy to rule out potentially something more sinister, but it is a simple at-home test, can be done frequently, more importantly, every 2 years, which can reduce your risk of dying from bowel cancer by up to about a third.
So what happens if you do get diagnosed?
There is a range of options that do happen if you do get diagnosed. If it is in the earlier stages, it may just involve surgery, and that is it.
And surgery, what would that mean? Removing part of the bowel or something?
Yes, removing the tumour potentially, removing the part of the bowel, depending on how advanced the cancer is. If it is in its earlier stages, though, it just involves surgery and no chemotherapy potentially. And once again, it comes back to the early detection of the disease. Of course, the more advanced the cancer is, it will involve surgery and it will involve chemotherapy and so on, depending how far down the track the cancer has developed.
Well, Julian, thank you very much for coming on to today's show, and very interesting factual information. And of course, for more details, if you want more, go to mindfood.com. And as you say, Julian, that's our little test. Where do we get all that happening?
They certainly can be purchased from pharmacies around the country.
Julian, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Mind Food Radio. Smart thinking. The perfect gift idea is a Mind Food magazine subscription. Visit mindfood.com today.
And you're listening to Mind Food Radio. As per usual, we have lots of interesting segments, and Cindy O'Meara's joining us again today, autoimmune diseases. Very interesting topic.
But welcome to the show, Cindy.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you, Michael.
I'm not a hypochondriac, am I?
No, not at all.
Autoimmune diseases, they're the biggest killer, you were saying.
Well, yeah, it's an underlying cause for many diseases. And you know, type 1 diabetes was always thought to be a genetic disorder, but we now know it's not. It's actually an autoimmune disease, which means the body eats the beta cells on the pancreas so that the beta cells don't work anymore and you don't make insulin. Mm. And we're finding this with a lot of diseases, that Hashimoto's and Graves and even some gallbladder diseases, myocarditis, liver inflammation, dementia, Alzheimer's, all seem to be linked with the body eating itself because it's lost its intelligence. And so we've got to go back to, well, what is the root cause? Why has the body lost its intelligence? And often it is we eat a particular food and that food is seen as an enemy to the body. So the body gets the army and it says, right, let's destroy this particular food. It's not doing a good job for us. Let's get the army in. But then you eat that food for breakfast, morning tea, lunch, afternoon tea, dinner, evening, and you do this for a decade, 2 decades. So the body says, well, I'm going to get the army and the navy and the air force and the marines, and let's just destroy anything that looks like this food.
Right.
And a lot of our foods look like protein. Mm. And our body is made up of protein. So let's just say one of the problems at the moment is gluten, because we do eat it for breakfast, morning tea, lunch, afternoon tea, dinner, etc. So let's just say it's gluten, and let's say gluten has a protein strand that is, say, AABCD.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then when the body just gets the army in and it destroys it, that's it. But when you're eating it for a decade, 2 decades, 3 decades, and all the armed forces go out, it starts looking for protein strands that are AABCD. And that protein strand, depending on your lifestyle and what's happened in the past, may attack the thyroid, and that's Hashimoto's and Graves. May attack the heart, and that's myocarditis. May attack the brain, and that's dementia and Alzheimer's. So when we take away the offending food, then the body stops eating itself. It calms the immune system down and it stops eating itself.
So most people, what you're saying is, don't realise they're even eating this stuff, and the body's just having an attack on itself, you know, all the time. And then all of a sudden, then you end up with these types of diseases.
Yes.
How do you know, though, what you should be eating? Can your blood test tell you that type of stuff?
Yes, you can have blood tests for it, but you can also do protocols. And I do protocols to help people find out what foods affect them. So yeah. What we basically do is we do an elimination diet. I just put them on the basics: meat, fish, chicken, lots of greens, a couple of fruits, and we just eat that for about 3 weeks. And I have a whole protocol behind this. Then we challenge the body. And the older you are, the more the body will tell you.
Oh, really?
Because Like, I find 20-year-olds, they struggle with this, but 50-year-olds or 40-year-olds, they can do this and they go, it's like a no-brainer. They stop aching, or they're not stressed as much, or their anxiety goes down, or their weight stops fluctuating.
Michael, you and I should do this.
Yeah.
We'll do this as part of a story. This is interesting.
Well, I'll put you on this protocol. We'll have to have a little discussion on this and how to do it and what to do, but it would be interesting.
Are you in, Michael?
All right, I'm in.
He's in.
He's in. Oh,
goody. Hey, Cindy, as always, it's great to have you on the show.
Mm-hmm. Lovely to have you.
And look, we'll talk to you about our special thing. We're going to do it. We're in.
Okay.
And for more details, jump onto mindfood.com. It's Mind Food Radio. Well, it's time to get into the cooking mode now, and we like chatting to our foodies, and we're going off to do some Thai cooking. We've got Marion Grasby joining us. How are you, Marion?
I'm good, thank you.
Now, you're all the way over there in Thailand. How's life going over there?
I absolutely love living in Thailand. It's my mum is from Thailand, and it's always been a dream of mine to be able to live here and cook here and eat lots of food here. So I'm really excited about it, and I'm just very grateful that work has allowed me to do that.
So when you went into your early work life, you went in to become a journalist. How's that helped you in the kitchen?
Well, I think being a journalist helps talking to lovely people like you.
Yeah.
I think, you know, for me, journalism was such a wonderful career to be in early on, particularly, you know, I worked for the ADC and got to live in regional parts of Australia, which I would never probably have done if I hadn't worked for the ABC and been a journalist. So I think it's just more broadened my outlook on things. And I think really being a journalist and doing some of those tough stories, and also growing up in Papua New Guinea, is not so much an influence on my food, but more an influence on the way I live my life. So I think, you know, there are lots of people that have it far worse than me, and I should be grateful for everything that I have.
Yeah, exactly. Now, when you're talking about life, though, nothing could prepare you for, say, the MasterChef experience. How did you get through that mentally, and, like, what's it like to come out on the other side of something like that?
Well, I mean, you know, obviously a lot of people say to me, oh, that looks so stressful during that show when they're watching. But a lot of people don't know that the whole process takes about 9 months. Which is a very long time to commit to something when you have to quit your job and you don't know what's going to come of it. And 6 months of that is living in a house with no TV, no radio, no computers, no mobile phones, no talking to your family except for once a week. So mentally it's very, very stressful. But at the same time, you know, I think when I look back on it now, I think about how much fun it was. I think about being able to cook with Heston Blumenthal in London, going to Paris, you know, all those things. I've sort of forgotten the stressful part. Think of it, you know, it always makes me smile when I think of it.
And now when you look at your life, I mean, it must be funny to walk along in the supermarket and see your face on products with this. It's really clever what you've done, though, you know, the ingredient kit business. It's a bit like what working in the government's like. I mean, I work in TAFE and everything is a process, isn't it? So at least you got right?
Well, the whole reason I wanted to make the Marion's Kitchen range was that, you know, my friends are coming to me going, I want to make a green curry and you've told me how to make it, but I just can't get it right because there's so many, you know, you've got to add the right amount of fish sauce, the right amount of sugar, the right amount of paste, all those sorts of things. And I thought, well, you know what if I could just package it all up with exactly the right ingredients and then everyone would be able to make an awesome green curry. And that was pretty much the motivation behind it. And it's worked, which is amazing. I think, you know, 2 years ago we started, obviously, with Euro sales, and now we have 150,000 packs sold every month. Australia.
So now you've got Mother's Day around the corner, you're spending it closer to your mum. So what can we do at home for mum on Mother's Day to get into the Thai flavour of things?
Well, I think, you know, I know my mum just appreciates spending time with me. So for me, you know, I'd like to cook my mum, you know, lots of little Thai dishes, but we'll probably do it together because we really like cooking in the kitchen together.
Yeah.
So we'll make some curries, some Thai salads, some fried rice because Dad likes fried rice too.
Yeah.
And then we'll all sit down and eat it together. So I think the main thing is to, you know, do it together if your mum likes cooking and you like spending time with her. But the most important thing is to make sure that you do the washing up.
Oh, yeah. Marion, thank you very much for your time, and it's really nice to finally get to talk to you. And, of course, for more details, you can go on to mindfood.com and check out her website. She's got some really cool stuff there. It's just, as we were talking and doing this interview, I've been looking at those crepes that are up on your website. What's hot in your kitchen?
Oh,
banana coconut crepes.
So yum.
Of course, if you just want to jump onto line, just get more details off mindfood.com.
Thank you.
Mind Food Magazine and Mind Food Radio. Together, smart thinking.
And you're listening to Mind Food Radio. Michael, who do we have on our segment now?
Well, we've got a sports psychologist, Ant Williams, and he's actually one of the panellists at the Mind & Nuts Potential event that's coming up in October.
Yep.
And Ant's really interesting. He, for many years, was a sports psychologist with different sporting codes.
Yeah.
But he himself was the number three in the world for diving, you know, the free diving.
Yeah,
you
basically where you hold your breath.
That's right, and go all the way down.
I'd be no good. No,
well, I don't know. You've got a lot of air. A lot of hot air, I've got to tell you.
Andrew, what's the secret?
But I'd like to welcome to the show, Ant.
Thanks very much.
Now, I guess it's quite a thing, isn't it? You know, teaching sports athletes, you know, the whole psychology and wanting to win. But how does that translate into everyday life?
It's actually taken me quite a while to figure out the lessons that sport has taught me and how to transfer them back into my regular life. I think that's actually quite it's a thing that a number of athletes actually grapple with. For me, what my sport taught me was really how to stay calm and how to manage my own emotional state when I was under a lot of pressure, not only competitive pressure, but under pressure from being deep in the ocean where there was a lot of anxiety and fear in what I was doing.
Mm. And that fear can actually be a good thing, can't it? Like, people can really use that to kind of, I guess, advance themselves and get ahead in lots of ways.
Well, for me, the fear is critical because it's what keeps me alive. It lets me know that this is what I'm doing has an element of risk, and I need to manage that risk at all times. And I think there's a crossover lesson for how we manage ourselves in business as well, around mitigating risk, but not being afraid to take the right amount of risk that enables us to innovate, to try things and do things differently.
Do you think sports people become good business people? You know, you've seen Grant Hackett sort of losing lots of different sponsorships and, you know, obviously at the moment having a pretty tough time.
I think it's a real challenge for an athlete, to be honest. And it depends on your sport that you've played, because if you've played at a high level in, say, competitive rugby, then you live in a very sheltered environment. You almost live in a bubble where you don't get, you know, you get a lot of people patting you on the back all the time, telling you how fabulous you are. I'm great at sport. People do love me and they love what I do and how I succeed for my country. And when you're in business, they might just look at you, that guy who sits in the corner office, or, you know, give you recognition for what you've done in your sport.
The everyday person that watches these sports men and women on TV and hears them on radio, what can we learn from them to be successful in our own lives?
I've heard a number of athletes speak and present at conferences, and I've personally taken a lot from them around you know, the ability to not give up, to overcome overwhelming odds often. Those stories often fascinate me, because it's seldom the case that someone gets born as a remarkable athlete. They work very, very hard, obviously physically and technically in what they do. They have to learn all these lessons on how to become mentally tough as well. And those are the types of lessons I like to hear from athletes and learn from.
I think you're right. Before the Rugby World Cup last year, I interviewed Graham Henry from the All Blacks, and he said, you know, the real talents are the ones that perhaps as children didn't show huge strength in rugby, but they were very talented at all sorts of different sports. And in fact, the real talent are the ones that can do more than just one thing.
Yeah, not only do I agree with that, but I think you can take that one step further, and you can take someone who's not necessarily genetically predisposed to do fantastically well in a sport, but through a lot of training and development and by helping them become mentally tough, they can actually succeed and do some remarkable things in that sport.
Great. Anne Williams, thanks for being on the show today, and for more information on Anne, go to mindfood.com.
This is Mind Food Radio, Smart Thinking.
It's Mind Food Radio, Smart Thinking. Of course, for more details on anything on our program, you can jump onto mindfood.com. We've got an interesting story coming up now with a lady who recovered from stage 4 breast cancer. Her name is Kitty Ferguson, and she joins us on the line. How are you, Kitty?
Very happy. Thank you very much, Ben.
You
How are
sound
you?
Ecstatic. Kitty, you've got an interesting story, and it's a story that we hear a lot of these days, particularly on our radio show. Living with cancer and dealing with cancer and getting through cancer, can you talk us through your story?
It was back in July 2011. I had a problem with my left breast, and I thought that I could heal it myself, being, you know, I like alternative medicine and homeopathy and things like that. So I thought, oh, well, it's a little bit of something, you know, and I never, ever thought that it was cancer. Anyway, as time went on, it wasn't healing, and I was finally diagnosed then with stage 4 breast cancer.
Because you'd left it so long.
I did, because I felt I could do it myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I was still doing exactly the same thing that I was doing. I was being a stress monkey. And I was going through a divorce at the time, separation, so I had a lot of stress in my life, and it was like another thing that I didn't really want to deal with at the time. So when I was diagnosed, it really, really, really floored me. I really had to have a look, obviously. My God, I couldn't believe cancer, you know. And what I did was I went to the Gawler Institute down in Melbourne because I needed to get my head right. My head was just in the wrong place.
Do you think it's a mental thing that helped get you through the next phase of all this?
It's definitely mental. If you let your head rule you, you'll be a mess. Palliative care said to me that what they could offer me, palliative care, just keep me stable because they couldn't operate. Being stage 4, that's the end of the line. So you couldn't get any further down. And I knew that, just knew that I had to go. You know, I had to go, I had to get up. I had to, I wasn't going to die.
Yeah.
And, you know, being a stubborn person as I am, there was no way in the world.
You don't sound stubborn.
And the breast surgeon said that we can try chemo to see if the lump whether the tumour can shrink to be able to have an operation. There wasn't enough margins around the breast to be able to have a mastectomy.
Right.
So the tumour had to shrink. And so when I started came back to Brisbane, started chemo straight away, and the oncologist was not hopeful, but she ate humble pie with me, and the tumour shrank, and the breast surgeon then, that was July, August, and I finished chemo in December, and I had my mastectomy in January 2012, and was very successful when they, because in that time I adopted what I had been taught in Melbourne, meditation, stress-free, looking after yourself, diet, embracing the medical, which I did.
You've lived to tell the story, and today you've spoken on the radio and you've spoken to thousands of people out there who you'll never probably meet, and hopefully someone at home or driving along or even at work today listening in may make that move to go and get checked, and you could have saved a lot of lives.
Well, I hope so.
Yep.
And that's my goal, to be able to let people know that this is not a death sentence. You can turn your life around. You can be positive.
Mm.
You know, and it has happened to me, and I'm so thankful.
Well, on the program, Michael, we've spoken about depression a number of times, but this is a really interesting book and a really interesting person we're talking to.
Yes, I'd like to welcome to the show Professor Sean Holt, who has just written the book Depression and Natural Remedies That Really Work. Welcome to the show, Sean.
Thank you for the invitation.
What's a remedy that works?
Look, there are thousands of natural remedies out there. A lot of them are absolute nonsense. Some of them are quite useful. And in the book, I systematically went through all the ones that people tend to use for depression. And the results are very exciting in that, based on what research is out there, some of them are very, very useful indeed.
You hear people take Hypericum and things like that. Is that one of the natural remedies?
Absolutely. St. John's wort is the most studied herb there is. And it's very effective, there's no doubt about it. But it is a drug, like any other drug. And so it does have side effects, it does have interactions with other drugs. But overall, when you look at all the data, and there's been hundreds of studies of it actually, it seems to be just about as effective as antidepressant medications, if not more. But it definitely seems to have fewer side effects, and so I think it is a good recommendation.
Now, there's been a huge increase, I guess, across society of depression, or perhaps we're just talking about it a little bit more. Why a book now? I know you've done a lot of research in and around this area, particularly with natural therapies, but why now and the claim that it's actually better than antidepressants?
Why now? I mean, I've been looking at natural therapies for around 5 or 6 years, pretty much full time. I got into the subject kicking and screaming. I'm a real skeptic on these things, like many of my medical colleagues. But then when I looked at some of the research, I found out that it's not a case that all of them are nonsense. It's just that most of them are. And hidden in there, there are some really useful treatments, and I think it's good that people know about them. So why now? Well, I do a lot of interviews and give a lot of talks to patient groups and GPs and pharmacists, around 50 talks a year. And depression was one of the subjects that keep coming up. It's one of the areas that people use natural remedies for, so there's a clear need, I thought, for good information based on the medical research that's out there.
Now, some of the recommendations or therapies that, you know, you stand by are things like acupuncture and massage and meditation and yoga and, you know, things like expressive art therapies.
Yeah.
To a lot of people, they might just be commonplace, but I guess it helps them along their journey in life.
Yeah, look, one of the nice things is I found about 20, 25 therapies that were useful, and about 6 or 7 were particularly strong. And what's nice is that there's something for everyone, I think. So some people may want to pop a pill, and that's fine. There's some biological products you can take. Some people might be more arty inclined, and there's, as you say, expressive art therapies for them. Some people may be more sporty, and there's things they can do. And actually what you can do is mix and match and do a whole heap of these. So look, there's a wide variety of things. Yeah, some of them are part of everyday living. So, for example, exercise and diet. So I do talk about those, and what people assume is that good diets and good exercise are good for mental health is absolutely true, and there's good evidence for that.
Now, one study you found, I think it was an Australian study, that omega-3 fish oil was to be more effective than Prozac in terms of severe depression.
Yeah, remarkable. Not many people know about that. And of all my years of looking at natural health therapy trials, that's one of the most interesting. And yeah, it was a group, a large study with around 300 people with severe depression, not mild. And they had either fluoxetine, which we know as Prozac, or fish oil, or a combination. When we look at the head-to-head between fish oil and Prozac, the ones on the fish oil had a slightly larger reduction in symptoms.
What is
What's also interesting is you could add the fish oil to the Prozac and get increased effectiveness there.
What is it in omega-3 fish oil that you think that, you know, makes it happen?
Yeah, look, we don't know. And in fact, a lot of these therapies, we don't know what the mechanism is. Antidepressant drugs on the whole tend to be interfering with the serotonin chemical system in the brain. It could well be that that's the case as well.
Professor Sean Hold, thanks for being on the show today. A great book, and one that I think will really help a lot of people. Depression, natural remedies that really work. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
Mind Food Magazine and Mind Food Radio. Together, smart thinking.
And welcome back to Mind Food Radio, Smart Thinking. Of course, we always have some fabulous content that we provide to you every week on the radio. And if you miss any of it, you can jump online to mindfood.com. Now, Peter Raymond is an interesting man. He's the Vice President of Parkinson's Australia. And it's World Parkinson's Day 2013 coming up. Peter is also a person living with Parkinson's disease. And we've got him on the line today. So he is a man about town with many, many talents. How are you, Peter?
I'm very well, thanks, Ben.
Now, tell me, Peter, World Parkinson's Day, when is that happening and how can we get involved?
It's on Thursday, the 11th of April, and you can get behind the event by fundraising, would be one way, which is maybe a morning tea at your place of employment with a gold coin donation.
What are the statistics on Parkinson's and, you know, how are people diagnosed?
About 80,000 Australians with living with Parkinson's. In Victoria, it's about 27,000. It's diagnosed through symptoms. So you can't go to a doctor and have a blood test. You have to evidence or show the common symptoms, and then a neurologist will make some sort of assessment. You may have a an MRI scan to ensure that it's not perhaps a brain tumour or some other neurological condition.
Sure.
And then you're put on medication.
Yep.
And if the medication starts to work and improves mobility, etc., then the assessment is, well, you must have Parkinson's.
And I suppose it's life-changing, isn't it?
It is life-changing. I mean, for some people, I was fortunate in that I'd intended to retire when I was 55.
Okay.
So I was diagnosed at 51.
Yeah.
I had the Parkinson's 5, 6, 7 years before that. So I was gearing myself up to retire at 55 and do something different, perhaps some consultancy or something. But there are people who are in their 30s and 40s with children at school and mortgages to pay, and all of a sudden they're beset by a condition which may limit their ability to work, or if they can work, they're extremely tired, which then impacts on their home life and social life.
Sure.
So, yeah, no, it can be a very life-altering condition. And the other thing is that it affects family and children and partners who are looking forward to a rich life beyond 50 and all of a sudden are saying, well, gee, I might find myself caring for my loved one instead of travelling the world.
Yeah, and I think what you're raising the awareness of today is something that I am completely unaware of, is the fact that I actually thought there was a lot more research around this, and with this many people affected, it surprises me that there's not a lot of research and money being poured into it to find a cure.
Well, Parkinson's tends to fall well down the queue when it comes to government support, but there is a lot of research occurring at various institutes in Victoria, the Florey Institute, and other universities and around the world trying to find what causes Parkinson's. Because if the scientists and so on can work out what causes this, then there's a chance they could prevent it happening.
Well, Peter, look, thank you very much for your time today and for coming on the show, and great insight there. You're the Vice President of Parkinson's Australia. As you said, people can get involved in their local area just by looking it up on the website. And April 11 is World Parkinson's Day, so why not get a group of friends together and throw a few coins in the barrel there and send it off to a good cause?
Absolutely.
Thank you to all our guests today. That's a wrap here on Mind Food Radio. If you missed anything on today's program, make sure you go online to mindfood.com and click on the radio tab. You'll find all the past radio shows and podcasts there, including this very program in a couple of seconds, so you can re-listen to segments that you may have missed today. Join me next week when we continue right here on the program, and we'll be chatting with a man by the name of Richard Barber, all about Auckland and the weight loss centre there in Auckland. So that's a very interesting story coming up. We've also got a drug and alcohol abuse story for you as well with Ruby Jasinko. And of course, we will also be chatting with Jacqueline Hellier, our sex therapist, about 50 Shades of Grey. And we're also going to go off to a health retreat next week with a lady by the name of Sharon Kolker. She's going to tell us about a fabulous health retreat up there on the Gold Coast. Until next time, thank you for joining us today on Mind Food Radio. Have a safe week, won't you?
Mind Food Radio Smart Thinking was produced in the studio of Radio Australasia. Produced by Ben Starr and Brian Newington and Patrick Kayrouse. Bogart Torelli speaking.